Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Thanks to Gavel to Gavel for being here again today. I'll let the record reflect it's approximately 3:36 p.m. on this Wednesday, April 13th, 2011. We do have a quorum. We have Senator Stevens, Senator Stedman, Senator McGuire, Senator Willikowski, Senator French, and myself, Senator Pasquin. We have four pieces of legislation on our agenda today. The first is committee substitute for HB 185. This relates to exemptions of discharges from the use of munitions. The second is House Joint Resolution 21 relating to opposition to federal wildland designation. Number three, House Joint Resolution 23 amended on the House floor relating to hydroelectric power and renewable energy. And then the fourth piece of legislation is House Concurrent Resolution number 9 relating to the State Energy Production Working Group. As the committee knows, we've been working under the 24-hour rule, and this meeting was just noticed late yesterday afternoon, and it is my intent to hear each of the bill sponsors so we can listen to the merits of this legislation, hear from the administration, take public testimony, and then set the legislation aside. And I anticipate that if it's the will of the committee, we will bring this legislation back on Friday. And just this is being done because it was late, it was noticed late yesterday, and I want to make sure everyone has the opportunity to read through the legislation to make sure that everyone is comfortable with it. So given that, we Representative Wilson, please come forward and identify yourself and your able staff, and we look forward to receiving your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. For the record, my name is Tammy Wilson. I represent District 11. And because of the important technical change, I would ask that the committee adopt the resources CS for House Bill 185, and I'll explain those changes. On page 2, line 19 and 20, the phrase "or service" was added to clarify that the United States Coast Guard to be included in this provision. And a reference to the Federal Clean Water Act was referenced differently, same content as the original. So it's just a kind of housekeeping.
Okay.
Can you go ahead?
Yes, how would you like to proceed, either yourself or your staff?
I will, thank you. In 2008, the state sought EPA approval of its Clean Water Act program. From this, the exclusion for active military ranges under Title 46 was amended so it now excludes the firing or other use of munitions in training activities conducted on active ranges, including active ranges operated by the Department of Defense or military agency, unless it results in a discharge into waters of the United States. House Bill 185 was vetted by the EPA, DEC, Department of Defense, and the state DMVA. It clarifies Section E7 such that it cannot be misinterpreted to restrict military exercises on ranges other than instances where the Federal Clean Water Act would apply. It reduces the chance of litigation in trying to interpret waters within the U.S. Joining me today is General Kakis, DMVA Commissioner, along with the Deputy Commissioner, Major Trumbull from the Air Force Region 10 Environmental Office, it's hopefully online, as well as Lynn Kent, the DEC Director of the Division of Water. So with your permission, I'd like them to be able to tell you a little bit more about this bill.
Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, General,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Stedman.
We're on version B, in Baker.
I had XX right.
That would be version X, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure, I got the right version for me.
I believe in the.
No, I've got it.
Okay.
Can you just ask a general question?
Yes, Senator French.
Mr. Chairman, actually, this is because I don't get to see my Representative Wilson beside her. I have an office right next door to mine. We frequently pass each other in halls and talk about how we don't have a quality time. So this is part of that quality.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasure. Make sure the committee understands. My understanding is that these AS4603-100E, and the list thereof, the seven items, are all instances where you don't need a state water discharge permit. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's what we're talking about here. These are all places where you don't need a state permit, and it's been on the books that you did need a state permit if you're firing munitions, but it became an issue once we assumed primacy for water permits. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator French, that is correct.
Okay. Hey, that was quality time. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
And for purposes of the record, we have CS for HB 184 before this committee identified as version / X as an X-ray. And I believe that's the appropriate CS that we have before us. So,
185.
All right. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Do we want to have General Katkus, or do you want to, how do you prefer to?
Mr. Chair, we'll let the professionals take care from here.
General, welcome to Senate Resources.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for having us today. I'm Tom Katkus. I'm the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Commissioner, also the Adjutant General for the State of Alaska. I don't know how busy everyone is, but thank you for hearing this important bill today. I have to pay some recognition here to Representative Wilson for taking this in hand and trying to get this accomplished. What this bill does is yet another step in trying to show our support for the military and its presence and its ability to operate here in Alaska. The inadvertent area that we're trying to clarify currently could cause additional red tape in trying to develop ranges in the state of Alaska. This is not an effort on anyone's part to reduce the standard and or to reduce the constraints and the requirements to still be sensitive to our environment and to exercise and maintain a pristine Alaska as we know it. Although we can do tremendous training here, we don't have to in any way adversely affect our environment. So this is not an effort to weaken or constrain anything other than to clarify and offset potential challenges in the development of ranges. So with that being said, it also does not in any way reduce Alaska's primacy in how it determines its quality. What it's trying to do is provide clarification and reduce a current potential requirement for doubling up the permitting process, the red tape that the military would have to implore.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add, McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner to General Katkus, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. This is part of our overall effort to increase the availability and the open working relationship with the military in Alaska. We've been working on a number of issues. The governor formed the AMFAST advisory group, which is retired generals and community members who recommend certain ways to move forward to encourage and keep the current military-industrial complex that we know and appreciate so much in Alaska. So if we can make business easier and stay to our original intent, and that's key. I know Lynn Kent from DEC is online, and we'll be able to answer more specific questions, but it's our understanding that our original intent was changed back in 2008, and we just want to make sure we keep with that intent and limit the amount of bureaucracy as we move forward and continuing to grow our economy in every sector of the business world.
Yes, and I do thank General you for meeting with me earlier, and as we discussed, you know, one of the issues that I was concerned about is the issue of the state primacy, and when this the amendment in 2008 was changed in the House Journal of 2007, it indicates, quote, an essential component of the state's effort to receive primacy from the Environmental Protection Agency, end quote. That was the intent of that change, and I want to make sure that we are not in any way lessening the state's ability to regulate as necessary, and, you know, so that we're not going somewhere where we don't, by unintended consequences, want to go. So, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we
long debate, big debate over primacy. The state really wanted primacy. Now it seems we're backing away, saying we really didn't want it in this case. Be asking questions later on to the EPA and DEC on that. But could you talk about levels of munitions that you plan to use and the types of chemicals that you plan to use in your ordinances to the extent you can?
Through the chair. Senator, to the extent I can, talk to the types of chemical compounds or those components of the rounds, but the rounds would be the current technology that we employ on the battlefield. So everything from small arms munitions to artillery rounds. These are ranges from aerial gunnery ranges to bombing ranges.
If I could, my district borders Fort Richardson. Appreciate it having there. A lot of my constituents work there. Back in, there have been situations over the years at Fort Richardson, in particular Eagle River Flats, where thousands of waterfowl, for instance, have died because of what was said was the chemicals from explosive ordnances were the probable cause. I think that was their investigative results. And I just want to make sure that we're not lowering the standard in any way, because there are waterways that run all throughout Anchorage from Fort Richardson. I think that's actually where Chester Creek bubbles out of the ground. There's salmon that run in that river. And so I guess I just want to make sure that there's nothing that's going to increase the ability to put dangerous substances into the water or the air from my constituents.
Through the chair, Senator, your point is well taken. The military certainly has become good stewards of the environment, and they have successively over the years become even better stewards. They're almost a renowned gold standard for environmental protection. The white phosphorus issues on the flats, the impact area out there, to my understanding, was a long-term problem, unknown initially until the waterfowl started to ingest some of those chemicals, and they started to see a reduction in the presence of the waterfowl. Upon study, cleaning, let DEC, I think, address that more specifically. But that was an area where once the problem was identified, the military was quick to address it and to fix the problem. This is not an effort to reduce the standards or the requirements. It's in everyone's best interest to keep those standards high and to meet those standards. So I would like to pass this over to DEC to see if they can specifically address the white phosphorus issue on the impact area for Fort Richardson.
Thank you. Any further questions of the general? Thank you. We will now, Lynn Kent with DEC, are you on the phone?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Are you there?
Uh-oh. You're very faint, but yes, I'm here.
All right. We can hear you much better now. Please state your name for the record and identify your affiliation, and then I believe that there are some questions, and I don't know whether you heard Senator Wilikowski's question on so if you did, please respond.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lynn Kent, and I'm the director for the Water Division at Department of Environmental Conservation. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't manage the remediation programs at the department, so I can't really speak to the remediation of the situation at Eagle River Flats. But I can speak to Senator Wilikowski's question about, or comment about, whether or not this bill represents DEC somehow backing off of primacy for the federal or for the Clean Water Act permitting program, and the answer to that is no. What the bill does is just ensure that the program that we're implementing under the Clean Water Act stays consistent with the Clean Water Act over time.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kent, are the state's environmental laws under the state's version of the Clean Water Act similar to the federal government's, or can you describe any differences?
Yes, Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, in order for a state to have primacy to implement the permitting program under the Clean Water Act, our program has to be as stringent as the federal program. So our program pretty much mirrors the Clean Water Act program.
And yes, follow up.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Can I just ask you, so there were a lot of complaints when we had the primacy bill in front of us a few years ago. There was big debate. The big concern at that point, or one of the concerns, was the federal government wasn't hearing these cases quick enough. And has that been, do you still have that, the same concerns that you had when the state was requesting primacy?
Yes, through the chair, I'm not quite sure what you mean by these cases. We have certainly experienced a delay in EPA review and approval of water quality standards that we base permits on, but that's a problem around the country and not specific to Alaska.
Senator French, did you have a question?
I do. Just to maybe back up a little bit and make sure that we know what the bill's going to do. The state will not be engaged in issuing permits to the United States military for their firing ranges under this bill. Who will issue permits?
Senator French, through the chair, actually, DEC will be responsible for issuing permits to the military for firing ranges if their use of the firing range would require a permit under the Clean Water Act. So that authority has been delegated to DEC.
And let me ask a further question. Will the Federal Clean Water Act require the issuance of a permit for the ranges that are under consideration here, which I believe is mainly the range outside of Fairbanks?
Again, Senator Frank, through the chair, the department is taking on authority for the Clean Water Act permitting in phases, and permitting of munitions is a part of the last phase, which currently is scheduled to be taken over by the department later this year in October. But any facility that would require a permit for munitions use under the Clean Water Act will become our responsibility for permitting. And I'm not familiar with that specific range that you're asking about, but if it would require a permit under the Clean Water Act, DEC will be responsible for issuing it.
Is it accurate that the state DEC then will be enforcing the federal law which sets the minimum standards?
Yes, that's correct.
If the state's interests were not parallel with the federal government's minimum standards, what process would the state follow if this law were passed?
I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. If this law were passed, it does not interfere with us meeting the minimum requirements under the Clean Water Act. In fact, it just makes sure that we're consistent with the Clean Water Act.
And I understand that the state will take action to make sure that the minimum standards are enforced, but if the state of Alaska were to advance standards above the minimum standards, would DEC be able to engage in that process if the law that we're looking at advancing now were to pass?
Well, the Clean Water Act requires states to have a program that is at least as stringent as the Clean Water Act. And this particular provision in the that we're considering under CSHB 185 continues to have the state's program for permitting of munitions be consistent with the Clean Water Act. So it's not more or less stringent than the Clean Water Act requires.
Can the state of Alaska determine that its interests are such that greater protection would be warranted?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the state can have a program that is more stringent than is required by the Federal Clean Water Act, but that's not what the bill is proposing at this point.
And that's kind of what I'm trying to focus upon. If the state were to impose or to determine at some point in time that its interests were advanced by imposing more stringent requirements, could that occur if this bill were passed?
Mr. Chairman, this bill would not prevent the legislature from imposing more stringent requirements in the future.
And could DEC then issue a permit after an investigation of those state interests separate from the minimum standards under the federal law. And another way of asking that is, would the state be disallowed from issuing a permit if it was not allowed by the federal government system?
Mr. Chairman, no. And in fact, the state regulates discharges that are not covered by the Clean Water Act already. So we already have a program that, for instance, regulates discharges to the land surface and also to groundwater, and those are not required by the Clean Water Act.
Again, what we're trying to focus on here is the issue of the state's primacy in its control of the waters that flow within the state of Alaska. Are you feeling comfortable that the state will remain primary as far as the standards to be applied within this state?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Senator Wilkowski.
I guess I'm a little confused. My understanding was that the reason for passing this bill was so that the military could bypass the state DEC and go to the federal government for these permits. Am I wrong?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I can see why you might draw that conclusion from this bill, and if you're taking this bill only for what's on the paper here, but we have other statutes that give DEC the authority to implement the federal program, and we have indeed received approval to implement the federal program. So this bill does not change who the military would have to get a permit from. They would have to seek that application from DEC and get the permit from DEC.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski,
yes, so
Senator French.
I'm confused. Why do we need to pass this bill then?
Well, Senator, through the chair, I would in part defer to the military folks who are most interested in the bill, but from our perspective, the change from a requirement for a permit when the discharge is to waters of the United States, changing that to language that says you'd need a permit if it's otherwise regulated under the Clean Water Act, from our perspective, mostly makes the program consistent with the Clean Water Act into the future, so that if there are future changes in the Clean Water Act, our program will remain consistent with the Clean Water Act over time.
Senator French.
Ms. Kent, I have a copy of a letter that you wrote to Representative Paul Seaton and Representative Eric Feige on March 21st of this year. On page 2 of that letter at the bottom, you say that House Bill 185 would only require the state to issue a permit if it is required to do so under the Clean Water Act. It is a subtle but important change that will retain the state policy to exempt ranges from permitting requirements for munition discharges to the land and for discharges to waters that are not required to have a permit under the Clean Water Act. Have you learned anything since you wrote that letter that changes your statement there in the letter?
No, Senator French, that's still accurate. As you recall here, the language of this entire Section E has a lot of exemptions for different types of operations that do not need to have a state permit. In 2008, we asked to amend that statute because it was inconsistent with the Clean Water Act because certain munitions discharges require a permit under the Clean Water Act, and we had to have the authority to issue those permits under the terms of the Clean Water Act in order to have primacy for the program. So it's been longstanding state policy that munitions use, among a few other things, have been exempted from state permitting requirements, and we needed to rectify that in order to receive primacy to implement the permitting program. So this bill really just clarifies the language, and instead of saying you need a permit if you're going to discharge to waters of the United States, we felt it was a little more consistent to say you need a permit if it's required under the Clean Water Act.
follow up, Senator French.
Yeah, I think I was laboring under the same misunderstanding as Senator Wilikowski. I guess I thought the purpose of this was just to shove the permitting over to EPA, but it's not. The design of the bill is to retain primacy, really, but to maintain the long-standing exemption for munitions ranges. My belief is if we pass this bill, the military will not need to get a permit before they conduct their training exercises in many areas of the Alaska Range.
Mr. Chairman, the permitting authority is the Department of Environmental Conservation, even though it's the Clean Water Act that's referenced here, and that's because we received authority for the program under other parts of the statutes.
You know, Ms. Kent, I understand that this bill was carefully crafted and that a lot of work went into it by DEC, but kind of what was the original concerns that you're trying to deal with here to change the law that was included in 2008 such that we need to do this 3 years later? What were the specific concerns?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, the changes here were proposed by the military, the Department of Defense, and an effort to have very clear language that is unambiguous that when a permit is required under the Federal Clean Water Act, it will also be required under the state permitting program.
Any further questions of Department of Environmental Conservation? Seeing none, we thank you. We do have Alpheus Bullard with legislative legal available. Mr. Bullard, are you available?
Through the chair, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal, and yes, I am available for questions.
All right. Have you been following the conversation while we sort through this issue of state primacy and the state's ability to issue a standard separate from the federal minimum standard?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, I have.
And do you have any thoughts on this, please? And we should probably have you identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Alpheus Bullard. I'm an attorney with Legislative Legal Services. And I don't know that I have any thoughts about the primacy issue. I'm available for specific questions if the senators have them.
Senator French.
Thank you. Mr. Bullard, the way I read the bill as it came to us, it exempted from state permitting the firing or other use of munitions in training activities conducted on active ranges, including active ranges operated by the Department of Defense. You didn't need a permit unless the activity resulted in discharges into waters of the United States, in which case you would need a permit. Now we're taking that language out, and we're going to say unless you're otherwise regulated under 33 U.S.C. 1251 to 1376. Have you reviewed those federal statutes?
Through the chair, yes, I have.
Do you think there's anything in those statutes that will require the issuance of a permit before firing or other use of munitions and training activities conducted on active ranges?
As both the state and federal law stand right now, our definition of waters of the United States, which is found in regulation at 18 AAC 83.99077, is the same as the waters that are regulated under the Clean Water Act, and that's the site which is provided in this legislation. I think the legislation might be more clear if it read the discharge into waters regulated under 33 USC to make clear that it's the waters and the discharge into the waters, which is the concern, and not the firing or other use of munitions. But as the law stands right now, it's my understanding that what would be regulated would be the same.
Follow-up, Senator French.
Mr. Bullard, I heard you say as the law stands right now. Do you mean without the passage of HB 185?
Through the chair, Senator French. It's just that the term waters of the United States under the Clean Water Act and waters of the United States as defined in our own regulations right now are the same. There's every possibility that in the future, for whatever reasons, that these two definitions could differ. Right now, they don't.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alpheus, can I just get a clarification? When you refer to the Clean Water Act, are you referring to the Federal Water Pollution Control Act?
Yes.
I'm not getting what this bill does. And maybe if I could have some, maybe if you could explain it to me, Alpheus.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the effects and purpose of this legislation are not clear to me.
I don't feel as bad now.
Any further questions of Mr. Bullard at this time? We would.
You're holding the bill over?
Yeah, we were going to hold the bill over. If you could also hold on in case there are any further issues that do arise that we may need to come back to you, but we thank you, Mr. Bullard. Mr. Pierre, I know that you've been wanting to. Oh, you're okay. You're holding off. We do have a Kevin Ward. Are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly. Thank you. Please state your name and affiliation, and welcome to the Senate Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kevin Ward, and I am counsel for the Army's Regional Environmental Office, and I would like to express our support for HB 185, and particularly the support of the Department of Defense Regional Environmental Coordinator and the Military Services in Alaska. In developing this support, we have worked with ADEC, as well as the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, AMFAST, and the Alaska Attorney General's Office. The bottom line of this bill is that the amendment will provide that the Alaska Clean Water Act would apply to military ranges only if it was otherwise required by the Federal Clean Water Act. Now, the reason that the military believes this amendment is necessary is because until 2008, the Alaska Clean Water Act contained a blanket exemption for ranges, including military ranges. When ADEC sought US EPA approval of the State Clean Water Act program, EPA told ADEC that that blanket exemption needed to be changed. So the legislature amended the statute, the state statute, to its current form in 2008. And as has been noted, the current statute provides an exemption for military and other ranges unless there is a discharge into waters of the United States. The difficulty for the military is that phrase, waters of the United States, is the subject of numerous and ongoing and current debates and discussions as to its meaning and its scope, including a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision of a couple of years ago. So, and in addition, if the federal law changes and if the state law uses that phrase discharge of the waters of the United States, for the purposes of determining whether a permit is required for a military range, there may be an inconsistency between the state act and the Federal Act. The question of whether or not a permit would be required of a military or other range is not determined by this bill. And the state and US EPA and any other person could argue as they deemed fit as to whether or not a permit was required. What this bill does is it provides some comfort to the Department of Defense by saying that issue will be decided pursuant and in accordance with the Federal Clean Water Act so that the military can have some consistency in Alaska and numerous other states in whether or not it needs to have permits for its ranges. So this bill does not affect primacy. We have run this language by US EPA, and this bill will not affect EPA approval of the state program. This bill does not decide whether a permit is or is not required. This bill would not affect, if a permit is required, it will not affect what standards Alaska could impose pursuant to its program. The only thing this bill does is say the answer to the question of whether a permit is or is not required will be determined in accordance with, pursuant to, consistent with the Federal Clean Water Act. And for that reason, we support the bill and would ask the committee to pass it.
Mr. Ward, could the state of Alaska require a permit for a higher standard than the federal standard under the current federal EPA process?
The state could ask for such a permit or ask the military to submit such a permit application either under this statute, under the current existing law, or pursuant to the provisions of HB 185. So the state can do that in either circumstance. Whether or not that permit would be required under the current statute would be if there was a discharge to waters of the United States. As I said, that's a phrase of some ambiguity and dispute, and so we would prefer that it say, as per HB 185, pursuant to the Federal Clean Water Act.
Maybe I can come at it a little different way. If there is an inconsistency between the state and federal acts, will Alaska's laws be considered primary?
On the issue of whether or not a permit is required, just that issue, is a permit required or not, that question under HB 185 would be determined in accordance with an interpretation of the Federal Act.
And what would that interpretation, assuming that we go through that hypothetical, that there's an inconsistency between the state and federal law, the state wanted to require a permit, so the state's DEC says we want to require a permit, what would the interpretation of the federal law be as to whether that's the state would be allowed to do that?
As to military ranges, that issue is undecided. It has not been determined. My understanding is that there have been discussions at headquarters, US EPA and US Department of Defense, regarding that issue and regarding whether a permit would or would not be required, and if so, under what circumstances, and that issue remains unresolved. So the answer is the question is yet to be decided.
So I take it then that the conclusion that might ultimately be reached is that the state's voice in that process could be eliminated?
No. The state's voice, Alaska's voice in particular, could not be eliminated because Alaska retains primacy. It would still be the permitting authority, and it could assert whatever position it deemed appropriate under the circumstances and seek to require a permit.
You know, I understand that. Is it accurate that your use of the word primacy in that context is in the sense of the issuing agency being the state agency as compared to the federal agency? Or are you using the word primacy in a different manner?
No, I was using it in the manner that the chair just summarized.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, appreciate the testimony. It's helped clear things up a lot for me. Could you just give a brief overview of the difference between discharge into waters of the United States and I guess how the Clean Water Act, how that deals with discharge of waters? I'm trying to figure out how we're changing the law here in regards to discharge into waters of the United States under current Alaska law and under the proposal here, which is to go to the Clean Water Act.
Yes. The term waters of the United States is a term that's used in the Federal Clean Water Act. It has been interpreted by US EPA, US Army Corps of Engineers, and various courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court. And those interpretations are not always consistent. The U.S. Supreme Court, when it examined this issue, came up with three different opinions regarding this issue. For example, the debate often involves whether a particular water, an isolated water, a water that is not in a traditional sense navigable, whether that is or is not a water of the United States. So that this question of waters of the United States is a current and ongoing discussion and debate about what it means. And that is one of the reasons why we support removing that term from the state statute and substituting Federal Water Pollution Control Act term.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. As I indicated earlier, we are going to set aside this bill for the moment. I think there are some questions that need to be more fully developed, and we will certainly look forward to picking this bill up soon again. But we do have three other matters that we need to bring before this committee. So we thank the bill sponsor. You're nice to have your smiling face here before us. So in general, thank you for appearing here today as well. Your presence is always welcome. So thank you. We now have House Joint Resolution 21, opposition to federal wildland designation. Do we have the bill sponsor here? Or do we need to take a, here we have. Representative Feige, welcome to Senate Resources.
Thank you, Senator.
Please state your name for the record and your affiliation, and then please provide the information to the committee.
And for the record, my name is Representative Eric Feige. I represent District 12 in the Alaska House. House Joint Resolution 21 is a response and clear statement of opposition to Secretarial Order 3310 and associated policies which appear to allow the Bureau of Land Management to create de facto wilderness in a state without congressional oversight. On December 22nd, 2010, United States Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar issued Secretarial Order Number 3310 directing the Bureau of Land Management to inventory and designate land with wilderness characteristics as, quote, wild lands. This represents a new classification and is currently not legally defined. SO 3310 may go so far as to seek wilderness status for areas of the National Petroleum Reserve, an area critical to the economy of not only Alaska, but of the United States. SO 3310 violates congressional law for Alaska relating to land. Both the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act are in conflict with SO 3310 and supersede it, since only Congress has the authority to designate wilderness areas. The order directly conflicts with the, quote, no more clauses in ANILCA, as well as the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. Resolutions in opposition to this secretarial order have also been adopted by the states of Idaho, Utah, Nevada. Wyoming has also registered its concerns with a letter from their governor to Secretary Salazar. Governor Parnell sent a letter to Secretary Salazar on January 26, 2011, outlining in detail the concerns of the state of Alaska. HGR 21 urges the Secretary of the Interior to withdraw SO 3310 and directs BLM to administer federal land in Alaska in accordance with existing statutes and guidelines of the agency. If SO 3310 is not withdrawn, House Joint Resolution, or HGR 21, asks Congress to prohibit the use of any appropriated funds by the Department of the Interior to implement, administer, or enforce SO 3310. Since the passage of HGR 21 in the House, as part of the bipartisan budget deal to avoid a government shutdown in Washington, D.C., Idaho Representative Mike Simpson authorized a provision that would stop BLM and Department of the Interior from carrying out its inventory of public lands with wilderness characteristics by removing the funding to be used. Planning for this new policy has already begun, and designation of the first wild lands could occur as soon as this summer in Idaho, Wyoming, and Alaska. At this time, it is unclear if those designations will move forward. Since the language in the budget agreement only covers until September 30th, 2011, it is important that HGR 21 continue to move forward. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Question from Vining Committee member of Representative Feige. Senator French.
Sure, thanks. And this is a confusing area of law for me, Representative. Maybe you can help me understand the difference between wild lands and wilderness.
Wild lands is not a, it's not defined. It's a term that somebody came up with. Wilderness has a very, has a legal definition.
And so if I could, thank you. SO 3310, what does it say about that, wild lands?
SO 3310 establishes wild lands as a new designation.
And okay, and you describe more about what it does in your resolution. And so I'll just get ready to answer, ask another question in a minute. But thank you, thank you.
Any further questions of Representative Feige?
I found it. Yeah, thanks. And just one about. On page 2 of the resolution, line 9, the whereas clause there talks about how the secretary failed to recognize that the policy expressed in the order will negatively affect the state's cultural resources and economic prosperity. Didn't SO 3310, though, make specific reference to cultural resources?
I'm not sure, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Feige, you know, in Alaska, we all know that there are vast amounts of oil up on the North Slope. Are you concerned? And those vast amounts of oil, some of that lie in federal lands. Are you concerned that the wild lands may impact NPRA or ANWR?
I think the concern, Senator Baskin, is that no one is really sure what a wildlands designation will mean. And for because there's simply a lot of uncertainty associated with that particular designation, the fear is that it will lead to perhaps more wilderness being designated within the state, and along with wilderness comes specific restrictions on development. So people are, folks are simply unwilling to have the federal government go that direction.
Any further questions? Seeing none, is there anyone online that wants to testify? There's no one online. Is there anyone in the audience that would wish to provide public comment on House Joint Resolution 21? Seeing none, we'll close public comment on the resolution. Representative Feige, I don't know whether you were here, but we indicated at the beginning that we were going to hear testimony and then set them all aside because we just noticed on this meeting late yesterday, and everyone may not have had the opportunity to fully review this, and so we're going to take these up soon, probably Friday. So just to let you know the scheduling issues.
I understood that, Senator.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, now we will bring before us House Joint Resolution 23, and welcome. Representative Pruitt, please state your name and affiliation, and let us know about the hydroelectric power and renewable energy.
Thank you, Chairman Passman. Lance Pruitt, representative for District 21, which is in East Anchorage. And I thank you for allowing me to be here today, recognize the committee for taking this up. I appreciate it. What we're trying to do here is we're urging Congress to classify hydroelectric power as renewable. We know in Alaska, as well as we also see it throughout the rest of the United States, that hydroelectric power has been and continues to be a vital aspect of our energy solution. And we would like to recognize also that because it is the largest source of renewable electricity in both Alaska and the United States, that we think that they should designate a little bit more attention to it. In the U.S., we've used targeted tax incentives to either increase or spur investment, as well as innovation in the energy sector. We've done that for both fossil fuels as well as renewable energies. And we've seen with renewable the success that's taken place there. We've seen a lot of the discussion about renewable energy that takes place now is because of the incentives, the tax incentives that have been put in place. Our concern, though, is that hydroelectric power only receives half the tax credit that other renewable energies receive. And we think that by equalizing the tax credit for hydropower, we will give Alaskans an opportunity to stem that gap and displace a larger portion of our non-renewable generation, which for the most part in Alaska tends to be diesel. Hydroelectric power has a large, extraordinary potential in Alaska. And that's because, I'll give you a little bit of an example of what we currently have in place and what we have the potential for in the future. Currently in Alaska, we have about 50 hydroelectric projects. And they provide about 24% of our electrical power. And they range anywhere from 126 megawatts with the Bradley Lake project all the way down to 7 kilowatts with the Walsh Creek project. So a lot of play in there, and we've been able to utilize the 50 projects that have various sizes to them. In Southeast alone, there are currently 32 projects that are either being built or on the drawing table. Kind of gives you an idea that we're just talking about South Central. The rest of all of Alaska, there are 200 locations that have been identified as potential places that we could have hydroelectric power. So we've got a considerable amount of places that have opportunities in Alaska. And so what we're trying to do here is just encourage Congress to go ahead and incentivize further production of hydroelectric power through some of their federal programs as well as their tax incentives. And I know recently we also have, I'm sure many of us have heard of the discussion that's taken place where Senator Murkowski has just introduced a bill that she, similar to one that she's produced in the past, that again addresses this issue. And so we hope to help her out by giving her some take that, hey, in Alaska, we agree with this, and we want to show her our support. So if there's any questions, I would take them now.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This looks familiar. Is this the same resolution that we built, Representative Thomas did a couple of years ago, do you know?
I think we modeled it after some of the ones that have been through before, yeah.
Any further questions? Senator Stedman.
The previous resolution, did anybody pay attention to it?
The previous resolution.
Yeah, the previous version of this resolution. It's like we do these resolutions.
The 23? The previous resolution that we modeled, they didn't necessarily act on it, but we did send it to them. We didn't get anything through. I guess this is kind of the answer to that. But I think this is an opportunity to continue to show her the support. I don't think she also at the time had any legislation that was before the U.S. Senate, and she does right now that she just introduced. Like I said, I believe it was last week. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I believe she actually introduced it last week. So we're going to see what we can do to be there right behind her with current resolution to show her that even though we've done it in the past, we haven't waned from that. We still have our support there. So.
Any further questions? Seeing none, we have Hap. Is it Simons? On the telephone?
Yes. I'm Hap Simmons. I'm the chairman of the board of Cordova Electric Co-op, and I want to testify in favor of the bill and to maybe answer Senator Stedman's question. This bill was changed in the House, on the House floor to call for Alaska hydropower, and the previous resolution that had gone to Washington, D.C., which was Representative Thomas's resolution, was asking for all hydro. So I think we've tightened it down to just Alaska hydro at this point. And Senator Murkowski has three bills before the Senate right now, Senate Bill 629, which gives out grants for environmental analysis and mitigation, Senate Bill 630, which makes grant money available for building new hydro projects, and Senate Bill 631, which I think is probably the most important one for Alaska, will ensure that generation of hydroelectric power is treated as a renewable resource for purposes of any federal program or standard. And this is the thing that we have been excluded from so far. So I think it's very important that we get this HJR 23 to the Congress of the United States. Thank you.
Any Senator McGuire?
Thank you, through the chair, and thank you, Representative Pruitt, for this resolution. And I, you know, Senator Stedman's question is a good one. And you know, we always wonder with resolutions how far they go and if they go into the circular file or not. And it's interesting. I served with Senator Murkowski in the other body before she became a senator, and she was often one of those that would make frequent speeches about resolutions ending up in the circular file. So I encourage you to, and I know you will, make the resolution all that you can in terms of effectiveness. If you can fly there yourself to be a part of the testimony when Senator Murkowski introduces her bill, any of those hearings to actually testify and to waive in front of the committee and to distribute to the members a copy of this, I think that would be helpful. And I guess just one question for you. Had you considered it all on line 15, page 1, of course, you're talking more broadly about hydroelectric energy for the good of the nation, but you do get specific about Alaskans, particularly those in rural areas, being dependent on oil-fired electric generation rates and how high it is. And I wondered if you'd considered putting in the renewable energy goal that we've set for ourselves as a matter of policy, and the fact that we're trying to reach that goal and that hydroelectric development in our state is a critical part of that. I could develop something on the fly or put something conceptual in it. I don't want to hold it up.
Yeah, we're not going to be moving it today again. Okay. So if there's something along those lines, we don't need to do it on the fly.
And that all, okay. But, you know, it's something to consider. I think it's innovative that our state is taking a lead on that, and as a body, we're moving toward that. We're well on our way, but certainly having the federal government classify hydroelectric power, which certainly is renewable energy. I mean, there's no argument that makes any sense logically that it isn't. Politically, you could say you don't want to classify it that way because you don't want to give a tax break, but you know, to put a fact in there that we're trying to reach that goal might be beneficial as well.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You can respond.
Senator McGuire, through the chair. Thank you. What we'll do is we'll, we can talk about FCU. I think you said on Friday you'll be hearing again, so we'll have a little bit of time and potentially put a whereas in there that states wide for us. This is such a crucial thing that why we're focusing so much on it. Every additional piece that we can add to state our case, I think helps us and potentially makes it so that it's not something they will throw in that circular file, that they see that there's a they see that there's importance behind it. They could get a better understanding of why we're doing this. So
are there any Mr. Simones, I think was the question was, is whether there are any questions for Mr. Simones from Cordova. And I don't see any before the committee, so thank you, Mr. Simones, for your testimony. Is there anyone else here that would care that's online? I don't believe so, and no one signed up, so with that, we'll close public testimony on House Joint Resolution 23. And Representative Pruitt, thank you for appearing before Senate Resources, and might work with Senator McGuire, but certainly hydroelectric generated power in Alaska is of utmost importance to many parts of this state, and I think it's going to be a bigger part in the future, so we look forward to working with you on that.
Thank you.
Any further questions of Representative Pruitt? Seeing none, we'll set that bill aside right now, and now we'll move to the last thank you, Representative Pruitt.
I'm the next
one. Oh, you're the next one. All right. There we go. I guess I was getting the... Anyway, House Concurrent Resolution Number 9. Representative Pruitt, again, welcome.
Yeah.
So, again, please state your name and affiliation and then talk to us about this concurrent resolution.
All right. Thank you, Chairman Pascan, and, again, the members of the Senate Resources Committee. Lance Pruitt. I am the representative from East Anchorage, which is District 21. I will just touch on this briefly, and then I'm actually going to ask my staff member, Dirk Kraft, to take it from there. What we're doing with this is we're looking to create a working group within the Alaska State Legislature that works with other producing states. And it's something that came about actually from other states. They started the discussion, and we jumped on board. And we feel that this is an opportunity to basically come together with some other individuals out there, other states out there, and have a more unified voice. So with that, I would ask Dirk to take over from here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Representative Pruitt and Committee Aid to the House Special Committee on Energy. Purpose of this resolution is to create in the Alaska State Legislature, the Alaska Working Group on Interstate Energy Production. And this working group hopes to develop a proposal for an interlegislature agreement that will facilitate collaboration between the Alaska State Legislature and other state legislatures in efforts to influence federal energy-related law and policy and to discourage delay or cancellation of economically viable energy-related projects in this state and in other states. From this working group, we hope to see a more unified voice from the states most affected by the consequences of energy-related federal law. We hope to discuss issues of mutual concern, share information, and identify areas for possible collaboration. And I can go over the be it resolved and further resolves that establish this working group. Page 2, line 10, the first further resolve states that this group will consist of four members, two appointed by the Senate President and two appointed by the Speaker of the House. Line 14 states that this group can meet during and between regular sessions and, subject to approval by the Senate President and Speaker of the House, may travel for the purposes of this working group. Line 20 terminates the working group on January 13, 2013. And line 22 sets a reporting deadline for the working group on January 17, 2012, before the start of the next legislative session. And it allows for additional reports to be made as the group sees fit. And I was also asked to explain the differences between this group and, for example, NCSL and Energy Council. And I know this is different than some things we've done in the past, and we modeled it after the legislation you have in your bill packets from other states. And a lot of the idea that came to us from the majority leader in the Wyoming State Legislature. And it was during the Western States Energy and Environment Symposium in Wyoming in 2009 that they went and discussed a lot of these same issues, and what some of the feedback we got was they found that consumer states were sort of dominating the discussion down there, and they had different missions for that resource development and extraction than a lot of the states that sort of align themselves more with Alaska do. And so we hope for this to be a more specific working group just for the purposes of developing that more collaborative working group and sort of coordinate as one voice to lead the discussion on a national scale. And I'd be happy to take any other questions you have.
Senator Stitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It looks like it's a duplicate, potentially, of a lot of what Energy Council does and what CLEAR does. And I don't think Wyoming is even a member of Energy Council, as I recall offhand the membership list. So, and for those that aren't familiar with Energy Council, it's a group of energy producing states and provinces and Venezuela. And we're hoping to get Mexico involved in it, that meet four times a year on energy issues and help with the federal energy policy. And we meet three times a year in different provinces or states. This fall will be in Anchorage. It's Alaska's turn. The next meeting is Halifax in Nova Scotia, coming here in a couple of months. And then one meeting in in March, where we go to Washington, D.C., and the legislature virtually, you know, takes a pause. So I'm not convinced here that this isn't just a duplicate effort that is already being done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions of Representative Pruitt? Senator McGuire first, then Senator French.
Thank you, and through the chair, and Representative Pruitt, if you could just take a minute to respond to Senator Stedman. You and I have had some conversations outside the committee here about that specific question. We talked a little bit about both Energy Council and PennWER and how this is different. I was involved with Grant Larson and in the group that conceived of the Wyoming project, and my understanding, of course, was that, you know, rather than bringing in the Venezuela, Mexico, et cetera, model, that it was really focused on states and how individual states could be a part of getting, you know, bringing energy independence to the United States. But, you know, you had a vision, and maybe you could respond to Senator Stedman. He brings up a good point in defending why we would need this group.
Thank you. Yeah, Senator McGuire through the chair, and also Senator Stedman, as the question came from there. You kind of hit some of this on the head. It's really an opportunity because the Energy Council consists of producing states within the U.S., Canada, Venezuela, and potentially Mexico. This is a discussionary opportunity with other states within the U.S. because the concern that Wyoming, who is not, to your point, is not a member of Energy Council, and some of the other states that this discussion is starting to take place with, their concerns are more on what the federal level, what they are doing and coming down, and we just had the wildlands discussion. I know we've talked quite a bit about some of the other ways in which the federal government is stepping in. It's an opportunity for us as states to not get into the minutiae of what goes on overall and how do we produce and interact within various countries. I know at the Energy Council there's a lot of discussion of what was taking place in Alberta, and we had some members from Canada, and we can't get the true focus within what's going on in the U.S. when we have these other members. And I think Energy Council is a viable resource for us because it does allow us to partner with some of these other provinces and some of these other oil-producing countries. But this gets a little bit more focused so that we can come together and say to our federal government, okay, wait a minute, what you're saying there in Washington, we're actually having to deal with out here. And it more of limits that discussion so that we're just focusing on some of these specific issues with our own federal government. So I think that's really the difference that we have. And Wyoming has signed on, Utah has signed on, and there's several other states that are in the process of proposing legislation. I know Texas, Pennsylvania, and I think there's even a couple others that we've heard that are potentially going to be joining in on this. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Just for it's clear than record, you know, the Energy Council doesn't concentrate on the issues. Well, hold me back up. Mexico is not a member. We're hoping to have Mexico a member at some point, because of the proximity of the United States and Canada and the interrelationships between the three countries. Well, Venezuela doesn't appear at the meetings very often at all. They're in a whole different kind of world themselves, but they also have the second largest oil basin in the Western world. And the discussions from the energy producing states and provinces at Energy Council is state and provincial issues and the cross-border relationships. It sounds like some of these states that are interested in this are states that aren't energy-producing states. They're consuming states. So, you know, it just seems to me to be a duplicate effort. And quite frankly, I think that Alaska's better off to work with the producing states and not the consuming states. But we, you know, at Energy Council spend a lot of time on federal issues, and we bring in federal agencies and so on and so forth at virtually every meeting. And they do move around. Sometimes they'll be in Canada, and there'll be provincial issues that we're dealing with there. But the gas and oil relationship between the United States and Canada run extremely deep. I think they're our largest trading partner in both gas and oil. So you can't, Mr. Chairman, you can't have a U.S. energy policy without working with Canada any more than Canada can have an energy policy without working with the United States, because there's virtually no border between the two countries when we start dealing with our energy, crisscrossing back and forth. And as a classic example, a gas line we struggled with for here years at the table. So, anyway, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. What is the purpose of the 2013 termination date?
The reason that the termination date is there, Senator Pascal, is because this initial working group is not actually any kind of binding group that we're establishing. What it is we're going to get together with these other states and sit down and discuss, should we come up with something, what would the groundwork be, and lay that foundation. And so this is putting that sunset on the initial discussion. If we start this initial discussion and we find out, as these other states join on, that this is not something that everyone wants to be a part of, we can't find the effectiveness that we're looking for, then it limits and stops our involvement. If it's something that we then want to pursue from there, that's when we come back and say, this is a little bit more in depth, this is what we're looking to do, and it allows for us to decide if this is something we want to be in on a long-term basis. So,
yeah. Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're running out of time. I just have a couple quick questions. One, your excellent backup packet included the enabling legislation from both Wyoming and Utah. I noticed that in Utah, to ensure that the group of four had some political diversity, their bill says that no more than three of the four members shall be from the same political party. Would you be willing to entertain a similar provision inside your resolution?
You know, one of the things that the reason I wasn't willing to think about that is because I didn't want to call into question the integrity of the Senate President or the Speaker of the House. The two is what the others have, as you see, and I figured I would leave it up to them on how they would do it. Obviously, in the Senate, there is a bipartisan coalition. I would expect one member automatically to be probably from a different party than the other. In the Senate or in the House, I would expect the Speaker to make the same decision. For example, if he were to choose, let's just say he were to choose the two co-chairs of energy, and by the way, I did not make this so that I could be going to and being involved with this, I'm just using an example, there would be a Republican and a Democrat there. So that's why we did not include that. I felt that I had faith in both the Speaker as well as the President to make the decisions wisely based on who they felt were the best candidates for this. So
that was an excellent answer. Thank you, Representative. Next question is with respect to the whereas clause at the bottom of page one. You make reference to federal law and federal law enforcement that too often overreach the federal government's constitutional authority to make and enforce laws. Could you give me an example of what you're referring to, particularly in the energy arena? That's what this is about, is energy.
Yeah, exactly.
Through the chair, Senator French, when we're talking about federal law and federal law enforcement, one example could be the Colville Bridge up in on Prudhoe Bay and access to resources across there. And I'd be happy to provide more examples if you wanted.
Just to follow up, I guess I can see where it might exceed their decision under federal law, but are you suggesting that they don't have the constitutional authority to make a decision about a bridge?
Representative Pruitt, for the record, Senator French through the chair. I think we actually just saw a resolution before us, which was the wildlands designation, which really pushes that limit. That is an administration decision that potentially could go beyond, as it is not done by the legislative branch, and could potentially be argued that it's not constitutional. And there's a few of those things like that we are dealing with, that this is an opportunity for us to step in together and say, hey, wait a minute, I don't think this is what we feel comfortable with. So,
just a final comment. Thank you. Just a more of a comment. And again, your excellent backup packet let me look at how Wyoming took care of business with respect to this and Utah. And I guess I'll point out that neither state felt the urge to claim that the federal government was acting unconstitutionally when they passed their enabling legislation. Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's interesting to you think about another organization, and maybe it is the right thing to do, but we need to approach it carefully. we spend a considerable amount of monies to belong to the National Conference of State Legislatures, the Council on State Governments, and to the Energy Council. And many states are now looking at what they're spending to those organizations and deciding to cut back and trying to decide which one is the most valuable to them. So just a cautionary thought, you know, that as this organization flourishes, do you and the money that we spend on Council on State Governments and NCSL goes to for large staff and organizing meetings, bring people together. Do you see this organization as being a sort of a duplicate of that and having a staff and having a membership dues and that sort of thing?
Senator Stevens, to the chair. You know, I do not see it as an organization that gets to the point where we start having the size, the executive directors, and the size that we have from those. That is not my intent because I don't want to find ourselves growing. Of course, we've got you know, our budget discussions that we take place. My intent is not to grow it in a manner where we are paying for these additional groups. And that, because you bring up a very valid point, we are involved with these different organizations, Energy Council, NCSL, CSG. Should we be adding another one? That's not my vision. My vision is to create what truly would be a working group with other legislators so that we work just with them. There will potentially be some cost and some travel, but I don't see that as being I'm not intending for it to be as large as we have seen in some of the others, but I think we can keep it down without having to pay for the staff and the significant amounts of money that we pay to some of these other organizations. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Thank you, Senator. Any Senator Wilkowski?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair. And you mentioned travel and costs, and I know there was originally a $20,000 fiscal note for 2012, 2013, and then it was zeroed out by the House Finance Committee. And I guess I'm just wondering, how do you travel and how do you pay for costs if you have a zero fiscal note?
Yeah, you're right. There was originally a fiscal note on there. The reason it was chosen, and it was not, by the way, I want to make it clear that I did not push to clear out a fiscal note in any way. It just took place by the in-house finance. They did it. One of the reasons they felt is because it's coming from the one of the legislative budgets that I will admit I don't fully understand that as I'm not on finance. They felt that it was within the cost of doing business and was not something that was above and beyond, being that the initial was about $20,000. The estimate was about $5,000 for the four individuals. And so they chose to go ahead and clear it out, as it seemed to be part of the day-to-day what we do, part of the business that we do in the legislature. So.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Pruitt, for your presentation on two of the resolutions today. So given that, again, we are setting this aside, and with that, 1 minute to 5, meeting adjourned.